Welcome to the College Baseball Nation podcast. My name is John Peters, and I'm here with Kyle McKelvey. This week, we talk about our 8 for Omaha, we pick upcoming series that are happening this weekend, and we cover college baseball news. Let's talk college baseball. Kyle, how's it going?
Good. I am staying warm. And I'm one of the lucky ones to have power here in Houston.
Yeah, how is the winter apocalypse that is storming across the South?
I'll tell you what, Houston is not prepared for this kind of stuff, but probably the South in general is not either, because a lot of the pipes are not dug that deep underground. A pipe burst in the front of our house. We had to scramble and take care of that before the podcast came out. So, yeah.
That's dedication.
Yes. You can't see this right now, listener, but I'm here in this lovely, comfy jacket thing. It's got some nice fleece lining, and it's great.
Slowly going underwater as the pipes burst and you flood your
but home. At least I'll be warm.
Well, in Northern California, it's 60 degrees and partly cloudy, so I can't sympathize with you.
Did you end up making the creamy jalapeno?
Oh, no, I haven't yet. We haven't gone to the grocery store in a little bit. We ended up cooking up some filet mignon for Valentine's Day though, so that was a big time step up in our average cooking.
Yeah, what were the sides?
Baked potato and some roasted broccoli.
Nice.
Yeah, it was a good day.
We did a like Louisiana Cajun casserole kind of thing with some blackened shrimp. And it basically just like this mushroom roux sauce. It was really good. Baked it in the oven with some breadcrumbs on top, and it was, oh. And then for dessert, we had this like apple, I don't even know what to call it, a little apple pie, but like a little bit healthier. It only had like a little bit of sugar on it.
You're losing me. Like,
yeah. Uh-oh.
Apple pie, but healthier. I don't know if you need that part.
It was really good. it was really quick, but yeah, we're probably making everyone hungry.
Yeah, I'm hungry. I haven't had lunch yet here, recording on Monday afternoon. So let's get to it. Let's talk some college baseball news. We have our first series cancellation opening weekend due to COVID problems. Kentucky at North Carolina has been canceled due to COVID issues within the Kentucky program. That was a series that we were pretty intrigued by. I'm sad to see it go. It felt like a series that Kentucky could have a shot at on the road, winning a series on the road against an ACC team, but it was not meant to be. Rumors is that North Carolina is looking for a replacement series, but we'll see if they're able to get something together. But that's the first casualty of opening weekend. Also, we saw an announcement by Arizona State. So they were originally scheduled to host San Jose State opening weekend. For reasons possibly related to COVID, San Jose State backed out and has been replaced by Sacramento State. San Jose State is in the same county as Stanford, and Stanford has elected not to play on opening weekend just because they haven't been able to practice as much due to county restrictions. So San Jose State might have pulled out of that series for similar reasons. But we'll get Sac State at Arizona State, which should be a really good series. Sacramento State we have picked to win the WAC, and Arizona State we have as a top 25 team. So pretty nice opening day last minute change there. And sadder news, North Carolina Central has announced that they will be discontinuing their baseball program after the 2021 season. There's been a few casualties in terms of teams due to economic issues related to COVID. North Carolina Central is joining Furman and a couple others that are electing to cut their baseball team. And also in more negative news, Texas Tech starting pitcher Hunter Dobbins was announced to have had a UCL injury that is going to be keeping him out for the season. Kyle, it just feels like all the injury announcements we've heard so far have been out of the Big 12. What's going on there?
I have no idea. it seems almost like the Big 12 teams are just announcing it like normal, but the SEC, the ACC teams, the other conference teams are having the injuries, just not talking about them, trying to keep it a secret.
Yeah, it just it feels like that has to be happening, because I can't imagine only the Big 12 is suffering right now.
Yeah. Yeah, we need to wait for the season to start to hear all these injuries, or like maybe just surprise starters that we'll find out later are for injury.
Yeah, it feels like if any team can handle losing a weekend starter, Texas Tech is at least somewhat in position to do that. They have some really nice bullpen depth, and Tim Tadlock has proven that he can really shuffle around pieces in the bullpen and the starting rotation pretty much at will and end up with some pretty productive starters. So I don't know if this will downgrade Texas Tech in terms of, I still think they're a legitimate Omaha contender.
Yeah, for sure. They have time to groom some other young people, but yeah, Hunter Dobbins will have to come back next year, probably looking like Tommy John.
Yep.
Tommy John surgery.
Also in rotation news, we heard from Ryan Folks was reporting it that Davan Horn of Arkansas suggesting that Zebulon Vermillion and Peyton Paulette are going to be in the opening weekend starting rotation for Arkansas. And I think, it comes at least a little bit as a surprise. They are returning Connor Noland and Wicklander from their rotation last year. And I think you and I both thought that we expected both those guys to be in the rotation this year, too.
Sure.
I would say that's generally a good sign, though, if you have some of these younger guys coming in and pushing out some experienced starters.
Yeah, and push them to midweek starters, have a solid full four-game week rotation, especially early on in the year when some teams have five games in the week. They have, like, their Tuesday and Wednesday game.
Yeah.
It's nice to have some extra depth there.
And you might
also – all name teams, Zebulon, Vermillion.
Yeah, that is a plus name for sure.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, having a guy too that maybe could end up as a long reliever or something in the bullpen could be a big advantage come postseason.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think you were already pretty high on the pitching staff at Arkansas. I had maybe a little bit more question marks about the depth, but seeing that, you know, Noland and Wicklander might become more depth guys for them, I suddenly start feeling a little bit better about that Arkansas pitching staff.
Yeah, for sure. And with the trust Dave Van Norn's been doing this a while, if he likes those younger guys to step up and take the reins there, then I trust that they'll do it. But yeah, we'll have to wait and see how they – I mean, they always have Wicklander and Noland to step in if those younger guys maybe crack under the pressure a little bit.
Yeah, and presumably one of those is at least a Sunday starter. So, you know, we'll see what Arkansas ends up doing this weekend. They have obviously a really big test going to the College Baseball Showdown. And so these guys might be thrown into the fire right away.
Yeah, definitely. They're going to have some tough time facing those Texas and Texas Tech bats.
All right, so the season is starting this week. I mean,
exciting.
I know. Even though most of the country is covered in snow and frost, the weather for the weekend, it looks a little bit better. Like, it seems that we'll probably have the snow melt off. At the very least, the College Baseball Showdown will have a roof on it. So, you know, we're going to get those premier matchups. And we can count on, you know, South Florida and the West Coast to have baseball because it's 40 degrees warmer than everywhere else in the country. But it's time for us to pick our eight for Omaha. This is something that you and I have really mulled over. And, you know, it's a tough thing to do. So to start off this whole conversation, I think it's fair to say whenever we picked our projected field of 64, which we published last week and you can find on the website collegebaseball.info, the eight teams that we picked as the top eight seeds are really the teams that we think are going to end up in Omaha. Otherwise, we wouldn't have put them as the top eight seeds. But the reality is it never goes all chalk. And there's certain teams are poised to do better in the postseason than others based off of their pitching staff or depth or whatever you look for in an Omaha team. So to start off the conversation, I want to run through the teams that we did choose for the top eight. And then I want to talk about the dark horses, the teams that we think might be able to upset one of the higher seeds. So our top eight, if you haven't seen it, we had Florida at one, UCLA at two, Texas Tech three, Vanderbilt four, and then five, Ole Miss, six, Louisville, seven, TCU, eight, Arkansas. And, you know, if I was a betting man and had to pick eight teams for Omaha, I'm looking at that list. I feel pretty good about that list.
Yeah.
But, you know what? It's never fun to just have a personality list all chalk eight for Omaha. So, you know, let's start first with philosophy and then get into some of the teams. So, Kyle, what's something that you look for in an Omaha team? And, you know, when you're going through picking some of your teams that you had that weren't just the top eight seeds, what's something special that you sought?
So, yeah, something that I look for is obviously pitching depth is really important, whether that be starting rotation or bullpen depth. But something else that I look for is just is an aspect of a team that you just are the best at. For example, Wake Forest. They probably will have top five, maybe top three offense in the country this year. They are that good. They have a 1-2-3-4 murderers row of insanely talented people, insanely talented bats. Bobby Seymour, Brendan Tensman, Chris Lanzoli, and Shane Munt. That is just an insane murderers row of bats that any team be afraid of this year. So yeah, something that your team just exceeds at is what should help, is what that team will hopefully lean on if the coach is smart and preparing their team well to make deep runs in the postseason. So Wake Forest is that team for me. Another one, actually in the same division, NC State. They have a really, really deep bullpen with some older, talented, experienced guys. They have a few players who are looking to make some, like a push for a closer position, the closer role, Cam Cotter and Dalton Feeney. And then also Kleiman. I don't know his first name off the top of my head, but Kleiman is, like the rest of their bullpen, older and experienced. He's a lefty with a little bit of a slower fastball, but really good placement, really good spotting. This deep bullpen should help bolster the unproven rotation they have. The rotation's a little bit younger, but they can always rely on, they don't have, like the coach should like not be worried to push their starter to six or seven innings or something, if because he can trust his bullpen will take it the rest of the way.
Yeah, so you have to pull a guy early, you might be a little bit quicker to use the hook in case you have a guy with a bad start. While, you know, and some teams on game two or three of a regional might feel like, well, you know, we got to ride our starter for seven or eight innings or else we don't have a shot.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, NC State's my pick. I have them beating Virginia in their their regional in the field of 64 that we picked, but they could end up being a one seed. So that would, NC State right now is the two seed in our projection. And they'd be in, they're in Arkansas's region.
Yeah, I like what you did with Wake Forest there. I think that anytime you have an offense that really can threaten to put up a crooked number on a team, that, I mean, you can have just a knockout blow with an offense like that. And, I mean, you're a little bit dependent on, you know, if the offense is hot that day, and if they're not, then, you know, if they go up against a real stud of a pitcher, the bats might go quiet. But I mean, we saw it in 2019 with Auburn. I can't remember, they put up 11 runs or something against North Carolina in the first inning of game three of their super regional, and you know, that was it.
Yeah.
I think
it was 13.
What's that?
I think it was 13 runs. It was North Carolina.
I know North Carolina ended up outscoring them like 7-2 the rest of the game, but you know, like by then it was too late. But like, you know, North Carolina won most of that game, eight innings worth of it. But it, I mean, when you have that terrible first inning, it spelled the end of it for them.
Let's see if I can find that score. Yeah, I think you're pretty much spot on. It was I had it 13 in the first, And then Auburn scored one the rest of the way.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the Wake Forest offense, especially with the power they have, is a type of a team that can put up four or five runs in an inning and, you know, really start putting things out of reach. I think I went more with pitching depth when I was picking my eight for Omaha. So I really like the pitching depth of the top five teams we have. So yeah, I was a little chalky there. I mean, like Florida, UCLA, Tech, Vanderbilt, Ole Miss. I think all of them have a good number of arms. Jumping outside the top eight, just barely, I picked number nine, TCU. They have two fourth-year guys and a fifth-year guy in the rotation and lots of competition from younger guys. So, I mean, kind of looking like, you know, Arkansas there with – they have some experienced guys coming back who were good producers for them, but younger guys driving them out of the rotation potentially. I think that could only bode well for TCU. And then, you know, funny you mentioned Virginia as a team that you saw getting upset, because I have Virginia as a team – that is going to make it to Omaha. So we have Virginia ranked number 10. I think they have four guys that are just really amazing arms for their rotation. Savino, Abbott, McGarry, and Vassell are all, any one of them I think could be like a front end type arm. And on a lot of teams, I really like that rotation. And that's notwithstanding, they still have a pretty good offense to go with that. But I mean, at this point, maybe listeners are getting tired of me hearing me talk about Virginia, because I'm pretty excited about this Virginia team. And we have them at number 10, so it's not too unreasonable to see them in Omaha. I think the most out there pick that I chose was number 17, UC Santa Barbara. And I think that they are behind UCLA, have probably the second best rotation on the West Coast. Boone, Tora, and McGreevy. I've mentioned on the podcast before, McGreevy, their Sunday starter, who's a converted closer, is now throwing mid-90s, can touch 96 going on Sunday. And all the arms I saw in their Fall World Series were really spot on. I mean, it's always hard when you do an inter-squad. How good are the arms versus how weak are the bats? And I thought the arms looked better than the bats in UCSB's Fall World Series. But I think the arms are good enough to carry them all the way to Omaha. The trick for Santa Barbara is going to be whether or not they can do enough in the Big West to earn a host bid. I think that, I mean, right now we have them at 17. In our field of 64, we had them right there as the 16th seed. And, you know, the reality is if they're the 16th seed, they might end up going to Florida for a super regional or something. And that's going to be real hard for them to win that.
Yeah, that'll be pretty rough. Yeah, I mean, you got to hope that enough West Coast teams or Big West teams in general, and more specifically, have enough talent to make their resume look a lot better. So that would help. That would help UCSB if other West Coast teams have like good seasons.
I feel like really if they were able to get a top, like I really like the top five. So if UCSB got like a top 10, 11 seed and didn't have to face one of the top five in the super regional, you know, I feel like I would really like them to make it to Omaha. Right now I have them in Omaha because, you know, we don't have a finalized draw, and I can imagine maybe they get paired up in a more favorable super regional. But, you know, really, if for instance they got paired up with UCLA, I would definitely take UCLA in that series right now. But with that being said, they have the arms that can win weekend series and that can do well in a regional, so I like them. I also went with a little bit of a sleeper too, so not one of my eight for Omaha teams, but a team that, like in the same theme of what I'm talking about, would be South Carolina. Like the Gamecocks are trending in the right direction in terms of rebuilding talent, and they've had a series of several good recruiting classes that, you know, might still be a year or two away from Omaha contention. But if I wanted to pick a sleeper based off of who has a rotation that could take them to Omaha, I like South Carolina.
Yeah, and for that, I chose Miami. it's kind of a, like we talked about last week or 2 weeks ago, like, can you have a sleeper with a team like the name of Miami, like team that's as good as they are historically? But yeah, that we had them as a 2 seed, and they're just really talented, and they're young, they're well coached. So if they get the right draw, then they could easily find themselves in Omaha.
You know, right after we released our ACC predictions and had Miami as a dark horse, the coaches came out and picked Miami to win the ACC Coastal. So what? Yeah, I'm going to say that we were just ahead of the curve there, but I feel like they're not much of a dark horse now that the coaches have picked them to win the Coastal.
I think the coaches saw our projections and they're like, ah, those guys.
Yeah, exactly. We have that sort of pull in the college baseball world. Mm-hmm. But I mean, yeah, Miami with young teams, they're, you know, normally very different by the end of the season than they are at the beginning of the season. Sometimes that makes them seasoned veterans by the end of the year. Sometimes they kind of fall flat and run out of gas. And, you know, with a team that's, like you're saying, Gino DeMari's a top-notch head coach. And if anyone can have freshmen clicking by the end of the year, it feels like, you know, him in Miami is a good coach to do that. But, yeah, a little bit of a question mark there, which is why, you know, we see them more as a little bit of a dark horse and why they're not a top 8 or top 16 seed in our mind right now. But right. I'm a lot polite about Miami.
Yeah, if they were already a defined product, we would have had them in the top 16 in our rankings. Like, yeah, they're just outside of that. That's why they're 2 seeds.
Even if they had one or two of those rotation guys coming back from last year, I think they could be, you know, a top 10 team pretty quickly. But losing your whole week in rotation, that's just brutal this year. That wraps up our talk about the 8 for Omaha. Up next, we're going to be talking about we're doing some pick'ems, and we're also answering some mailbag questions. So let's dive into the mailbag. We had a bunch of questions sent in, and some of them are a little bit easier, some of them are a little bit tougher. Let's start with an easy one. So someone's asking us what's going on exactly with the extra innings rule. And as you may have heard already, the NCAA approved the change to extra inning rules to align with what the MLB was trying out in their 2020 season, where you have a runner starting on second base. The guy who was the previous spot in the lineup gets to go out and start on second base. And that's starting only in the extra inning. So, you know, 10th inning for a 9-inning game or 8th inning for a 7-inning game. The American was the conference that was, I think, most pushing this. That was in their plan for their conference series. So they're doing 4-game series. And part of what they wanted to do to make sure that arms didn't get overused or overtaxed was to introduce this rule. It got approved, but at least as of now, it doesn't seem that any other conference is moving forward with it as a set rule. Dave Van Horn mentioned that it could be a good thing on a getaway day, on travel day, that maybe if you really need to finish a game, it would be something that would be considered. But as of right now, I think that's more of a case-by-case will be considered thing. I don't think it's a definite thing for any team.
I think it could also be really helpful in the midweeks. There are more travel days too, but like for those local teams that want the kids to get back and start studying or something, just like not have to worry about driving home in the dark or flying home in the dark if necessary. It'd be nice to have shorter postseason or extra inning games.
Yeah, I think the baseball purist in me hates the idea, but I definitely understand the practicality of it.
Yeah, it makes sense. And it's just for, hopefully just for this weird year, or maybe it can only be done in like non-conference games that don't matter for the conference.
Yeah.
They're maybe still fun.
Do a doubleheader or something.
Yeah.
All right. Next up in the mailbag, we're getting asked about the Big Ten. So the Big Ten, if you haven't heard already, hasn't released a conference schedule. And, you know, at this point, we're recording this on Monday, so the rest of the country basically is starting their season in 4 days. But independent of that, the Big Ten is not doing non-conference play. And a tidbit of interesting news that we saw reported this week was that one thing the Big Ten is considering doing is early season tournaments within conference. And one idea was, had a few teams heading down to Texas. I think it was Nebraska, Indiana, Michigan, and another team like Purdue or something, going down to Round Rock and playing a round robin tournament in March. And I think the rationale behind that is it's just going to be really hard to start a Big Ten season with a bunch of home games in the Big Ten too early. So, you know, let's travel down to Texas and hope there's no winter storm there still, and at least get teams a chance to play some games. But I mean, in one way, I get the logic, but it also feels like once you have teams getting on planes to fly to Texas, like, couldn't you just schedule one or two non-conference weekends and have some of these, like, have that replaced by, you know, trips to some of the northern ACC, SEC schools?
Yeah. But hey, good luck. Good news this weekend is that it's going to be like 60, 70 this weekend in at least Houston, probably College Station or Austin too. So, yeah, it'd be nice if I'm looking up Baylor's schedule to start off the year, but like it'd be nice if some of those teams could just, like Baylor and A&M could drop their opening weekend team and play like a Michigan and Indiana. Like that would give, and maybe they would just like test super well for the first week or something, and then they could do a round robin, or maybe they just do like two series or one series each against those two teams. Like that'd be really cool. But I mean, if there's no non-conference allowed in the Big Ten, it's probably not going to get approved this late in the game, especially since they're slacking and don't have conference schedules announced yet.
And yeah, I wonder if they're holding out on those schedules because they're trying to do something like this behind the scenes, but I don't know the conversations happening in the Big Ten. And to be honest, I haven't heard of anyone who really does. So it's just hard to tell what they're doing.
Yeah, it's just kind of like unfortunate. If they are doing something like this, that's cool. It'd be nice if they could like, announce it that they're trying to schedule this, and maybe have some outside interest and kind of some pressure maybe to get this done quicker, because it's 4 days before the season starts.
Yeah,
just not going to announce it yet because there's not going to start until a few weeks out anyway. Like
the kind of. I bet Big Ten play won't start until at least a few weeks into March. But, you know, if they're going to get any of these early March things going, they got to get them going pretty soon.
Yeah, sure.
But the question we got is this going to hurt the chances of the Big Ten getting teams into the postseason? And I think Kyle and I, we talked about this some. I think we're both leaning yes. Like I think it's going to be hard getting 4, 5, 10 teams from the Big Ten in. You know, we really had a hard time getting 3 teams into our field of 64. So I think unless the Big Ten can kind of pull something out of their hat and get like a series or two against some of the top ranked foes for each team, like it's going to be really hard for them to get a bunch of teams into the field of 64.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Or even just like some local competition for those teams. Like you could just have, I just think of like Nebraska, Omaha, we have them in the tournament winning their conference. And that'd be nice for like Nebraska to play, or Illinois to play Illinois State since that's really close, or Indiana State. Like there is good
Michigan, look. Like there are some good teams out there that at least are, you know, when you're thinking about seeding, you know, you can get maybe a little bit of an easier look at things when, you know, you can see that they won a series against these teams or whatever.
Right. Like if a bunch of the Missouri Valley plays a bunch of the Big Ten, then we have one or maybe two Missouri Valley teams in, and Big Ten lost to all those Missouri Valley teams, then it's like, okay, I think we should probably ease up on the Big Ten. Kind of like
you know, Louisville and Vanderbilt aren't that far from, like, there's some really good teams right there. It just, I'm frustrated by it. I really wish the Big Ten would have done something a little differently here.
Yeah, for sure. Cincinnati's kind of bleeding into Kentucky too. So like Cincinnati, Louisville, those teams would love to play Ohio State or yeah, any of those teams up there.
Yeah. You know what? Maybe in retrospect, we'll look back and it'll be a little bit kinder to the Big Ten, but you know, I'm not ready to do it quite yet, but you know, We'll see what they come up with.
Yeah, I mean, they could come up with a great plan, but I don't know.
I wouldn't bet on it, but
me neither.
All right, moving on from the Big Ten. One of the toughest mailbag questions we got was who's going to win the SEC West, and short answer is, boy, we would sure love to know. It's just we've talked about it in a decent amount of detail at this point, that all seven teams could be field of 64 teams come June, and we have reasons to like all seven. I think like a good starting point would be that between team four and five, there's a little bit of a gap. So I think the top four in the West are a good amount better than five, six, and seven. But even then, you know, we like all seven teams. Right now, I think, Kyle, you and I agree that Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Arkansas, LSU are our top four, right? That's a good starting point.
Yeah, I think
not in that order necessarily.
No, not in that order necessarily. But yeah, I think the winner of the SEC West will more than likely come from there. So if you can pick the winner from that, then you should go to Vegas real quick and put some numbers down on other things.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at who our highest ranked team from that group is, it's Ole Miss. And
right.
Is Ole Miss going to win the SEC West? I mean, bam, easy answer. We already did the work.
Yeah, that's true. Put the work on past John and Kyle.
Yeah.
It's possible. They have slightly better than 25% chance if we can say that only those four teams will win the SEC West. But I think it's more likely than not the winner will come from there. And Ole Miss, I think we said, has one of the tougher schedules, one of the tougher draws from the East. So they all have to play each other, of course. And Ole Miss plays, you know.
Oh, sorry, I was distracted by your giant blanket robe that you're wearing.
I was waving it at him.
Yeah, they pull Ole Miss from the East this year. They start off with so they travel at Florida. That's a series that happens right at the beginning of April. They get South Carolina at home at the end of April. They get Vanderbilt at home in May, and then they travel to Georgia to finish the year in May. So getting Florida, Vanderbilt, I mean, that's the top two teams in the East. South Carolina, Georgia are probably both top five in the East. So, I mean, four of the five toughest teams, I would say pretty confidently, that they get from the East, and including going to Florida, traveling to the number one team in the country. So Ole Miss, like, definitely didn't get any favors in terms of cross-divisional series that they got.
No, yeah, and looking at the others, Arkansas has at South Carolina, Georgia, at Tennessee, and Florida. So they got three of the top four teams from the SEC East. They just missed Vanderbilt from that list. So that's also a pretty tough schedule. I don't think it's as tough as Ole Miss's, but the other two, I mean, Mississippi State got a pretty easy draw easier relatively. They're all pretty tough, but Mississippi State got Kentucky at home, I think. Yeah, Kentucky at home, at Vanderbilt, South Carolina on the road, and hosting Missouri. So they got the two teams that we consider projecting as the two bottom teams in the SEC this year, Missouri and Kentucky. It's going to be really hard to miss all of the top four teams. Actually, it's probably going to be impossible to miss all four of the top four teams, but Mississippi State probably got the best draw out of four SEC West teams that we're looking at. So if I just had to go based off of that, I'd probably pick Mississippi State. But yeah, I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, I think in absence of better convictions on any of the teams individually based off of their talent and returning guys, I feel like going off of the schedule is a reasonable take, because, you know, a game against Kentucky is a lot more winnable than a game against Vanderbilt. And that's just a fact of the matter. And I don't mind that Mississippi State pick. You know, we have them as a top 10 team, and I think they're really good. But I also don't currently have them in my 8 for Omaha, which and I do have Ole Miss, for instance, in that 8 for Omaha, which I think kind of suggests there that it might be easier to get to Omaha than to win the SEC West, which is
yep.
kind of crazy. But, you know, I think Mississippi State's not a bad pick. when you think about the schedule and the top four teams. So I don't think there's any wrong picks in there.
No, I agree. LSU's kind of got a similar draw too. They got South Carolina, Vandy, Kentucky, and Tennessee. So they got, yeah, probably the second best or the best draw from the SEC East. So LSU would be one of those teams that, I mean, obviously they're one of those four teams that we're considering, but LSU, I mean, they're really talented. They're really young. They pull in a great recruiting class. They have a really good starting rotation and some young bats that they're going to groom this year. And Palmieri's getting really good at having some of those young, talented guys make a huge difference on offense. So,
yeah.
It's possible, but I don't know.
I feel like LSU might have a little bit of growing pains, though. I think they're a good team, but I would be – I don't know.
I have them in Omaha, but
you know, and I could see that. You know, if the talent comes together by the end of the year, I'm not opposed to having them in Omaha, but whether or not they can week in, week out, be as productive as, you know, Mississippi State, that's why I think I like that. Mississippi State more than LSU right now. But, you know, no bad choices. You know, let's end the conversation there before we say anything to anger one fan base too much or another.
Well, nothing, everything that's against their fan base is negative, so can't really.
Yeah, let's go on record and we hate all teams in the SEC West, so no individual team can be too mad at us.
Exactly, pulling the Kendall Rogers.
Yeah, inspirational man right there. So last thing that I want to touch on this week. We have series to look forward to. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Like it's been so long. A 50-week off season or whatever it's been. We finally have games happening on Friday. Games start 12 p.m. Eastern time on Friday. I was looking it up. There's three games that happen at 12 p.m. Eastern time, including one of the games at the College Baseball Showdown. So that's Mississippi State versus Texas is a first thing in the morning game. They get it going early because they have three games that day, and all the games actually that have the morning start are all in the tournaments. So Louisiana Tech and Notre Dame's playing at LSU, and then Alabama, A&M, and Prairie View Pine Bluff are doing a tournament with a bunch of schools in New Orleans. So, you know, you got to get an early start when you have a bunch of games happening on the same field. But there's baseball that is so close you can taste it. And we are starting off our weekly pick'em with some really good series and some really tough series to pick from. So we have four series that are all top 50 teams, and then the College Baseball Showdown, which is, you know, all top 12 teams. So obviously really good quality. So Kyle, let's go through and pick our winners for these four series, plus choose a team from the College Baseball Showdown that is going to be the big winner there. And, you know, it's tough with these little tournaments. It's feasible that, you know, three teams go 3-0 at the College Baseball Showdown, because, you know, if one conference just swept the other, that's how that would look. And, you know, it's hard to crown necessarily a champ of any of these tournaments, but, you know, let's pick someone there that we think is going to walk out of the weekend with a pretty nice pep in their step. But starting off with, let's start off with the number one team in the country. So we have number 22 Miami traveling to their rival number one Florida. Who you got in that series?
I've got to take Florida, brand new ballpark, number one team in the country, hosting an in-state rival that we have lower ranked. I think that's prime spot for Florida to sweep, but I've got Florida winning two out of three games there, just because I'm a coward and can't pick a sweep yet.
So I'm right there with you for everything you said. Florida has had Miami's number in recent years. They haven't lost a series against Kane since 2014, and in that time period have like an 800% winning record against Miami. They swept Miami at Miami last season. I really wanted to pick the sweep, but, you know, the bet hedger in me is going with you. I'm not a total coward. I did pick a sweep in one of the other series, but for this one, I'm saying Florida gets two out of three. I think Miami's offense is good enough that one of the 3 days they get to the Florida pitching staff. And, you know, I'm not going to say it's going to be, you know, like a 10-run game for Miami, but I think one of those games they get 6-7 runs and maybe pull away from Florida a little bit.
Yeah, or like a 3-2 type ball game.
I can see that. Yeah, I would guess most of these games are going to be relatively low scoring because Florida's pitching staff so good. But, you know, anytime you think you're going to see good pitching, that's always when you get, you know, like 3 home runs in the first inning or whatever. So expectations.
Or 13 runs.
Yeah. You know what? I'm not much of a betting man, but I will put money that no team will score 13 runs in the first inning of any of these 3 games.
Oh, any of these 3? No. Yeah, I agree with that. I thought you were saying any across the country, and I would take that bet. But
oh, I would still take that bet. That's hard scoring 13 runs in a first inning, too. I would definitely take that bet. All right, we got to take this one offline. I need to take some money from you.
All right, let's do it.
Next up, UConn, number 45, UConn travels down the coast to play at number 10, Virginia. So I'll go first. I mean, I have Virginia as an Omaha team. I love what UConn has. I think they're the favorite in the Big East, but here's my sweep. UConn, credit to you for challenging yourself and traveling at a top 10 team week one, but I think the Huskies come away with 3 losses. Virginia's winning this one 3-0.
Yeah, I also like Virginia. I mean, we have them as a top 10 team for a reason. I like them winning 2 out of 3 here, so I have Coastal winning one of their games. I do really like what UConn has.
That'd be really impressive if Coastal came into the series. And
did I say Coastal? I was looking at the next series that we have picked. UConn. All right. So I really like what UConn has. And I think they have a chance to win one game here. Probably that's the max. I think if we put an over-under on it, it would be half a game. And that's we both fell on the other side of that line. So that's why I did that.
Yeah, and you know what? If I hope this puts a chip on UConn's shoulder, because if UConn goes in and wins this series, that's really going to change the national perspective on this UConn team, I think.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, they'd be in the tournament easily.
Yeah, yeah. We would have them from just like, you know, the auto bid from the Big East to like that. This is obviously it's 1 week and there'll be a whole season ahead of them. But in terms of a statement series, UConn has a chance here to go to Virginia. And if they were to show up and win 2 out of 3, that's a big time series win.
Yeah, I would be big on the overreacting train if that happens.
Yeah, I would say UConn for sure is top 25 team in our rankings if that happens. I would happy to be to hop on that hype train.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, and the nice thing with UConn, we've you know beaten this horse a few times, but they also play Texas Tech and Southern Miss, so. You know, they're not just going to ride a hype train. They're going to really have to chug along that hype train if they're going to be a serious, you know, top 25 team type contender.
Yeah, they have plenty of chances to prove us wrong or right.
All right, next up we got number 18, Duke, traveling to number 37, Coastal Carolina. Here's where Coastal shows up.
Yeah. Yeah, right. I have Coastal winning 2 out of 3 here. Maybe a little bit of an upset. We have Duke ranked higher, but it's at Coastal. They're really good chance to be the best in their conference. And when you're the best, you come in with a lot of confidence. So I don't know. I like Coastal here. Really not much more than a hunch though.
I like Duke. I'm picking Duke 2 out of 3. I wouldn't be surprised if Coastal wins this series. I mean, Duke is Bryce Jarvis-less. I've talked about that before. He was one of my favorite players in the college game, but the pitching staff at Duke is still really strong up the middle, catcher, shortstop, center field. They have a really nice defense and some productive arms. Joey Loperfido in center field, I think, is one of the most interesting guys in the ACC. And I think the Duke Blue Devils do just enough to win 2 out of 3 in this series and take a nice weekend series win to open the season. Up next, we got number 33, San Diego, going to play 2 games at San Diego State and then doing 1 game at San Diego. So they're doing a 3-game series, 2 of them at San Diego State, 1 at San Diego. all of them obviously within, what, 15, 20 minutes of each other. So home versus away maybe matters a little bit less in this series, but most of those games are at number 39, San Diego State. What do you got going in this one, Kyle?
I think just for the reason that it's at the home field of San Diego State for more, I think I have to pick them. A little bit of a hunch, but we have both of them winning their conference, I believe, right?
We have San Diego State winning the Mountain West. We have San Diego finishing second in the West Coast Conference behind Pepperdine.
Okay. Yeah, I think home field advantage will do a little bit this year. Do you know if it's home, away, home, or is it going to be like home, home, away?
I think it's two at San Diego State and then the third game's at San Diego.
Okay. Yeah, they have a chance to win the series right there at home, first two games, and then not worry about the third game.
Yeah.
A little bit of a hunch, though.
Before we started this, I chose San Diego State winning two out of three. And here in this moment, I'm flipping the script. I'm choosing San Diego to win two out of three.
All right.
The last thing San Diego did to end last year was they traveled to Indiana and won two out of three games at Indiana. And you know what? If they can go all the way to the Big Ten and win a series, I don't think going across town is going to phase them. I like San Diego, and I'm really bullish on the West Coast Conference. I really think that San Diego has a legit shot at an at-large bid. And you know what? If they're going to have that legit shot, this is a series they got to win. So I'm saying San Diego takes two out of three here.
That's bold.
I like it. So last up we have is the College Baseball Showdown. Trying to pick a team here that's going to have a good weekend. And to be honest, these series, these tournaments are so hard to pick because it's
possible.
It's not like you can, you know, tax a bullpen in game one and have it pay off in game two or three because you're playing different teams. And, you know, it really, all it takes is one team playing a really long game day one. And, you know, they're behind eight ball for games two and three. And it's so much can go on in these tournaments, but they're, you know, we got to go off something. So I'm laying it out there. I think TCU is the team to watch in the Big 12. I think Texas Tech, obviously, we have as our favorite, but I think TCU, with the experience they bring back, losing absolutely nobody, with a bunch of really elite pitchers, an offense that should be somewhere between passable and really good, you know, somewhere between that good, like good range. I think TCU shows up and wins two or maybe even all three games. And you know what? I might regret it. I might get shown up and by these SEC teams, but I like TCU.
Yeah. And on a similar note, I like Ole Miss. I think, I mean, they have a really, really good offense. Kind of the opposite, I guess. Maybe their bullpen and pitching depth isn't as good as we'd expect, but I think they have a chance to really prove that they're worth all the high rankings that they're getting everywhere. I think they have the best weekend out of the SEC and I guess all over. I think we talked about this already. That all three teams have a chance to go in either conference have a chance to go 3-0. But yeah, I think picking on these teams is really hard, but yeah, I like Ole Miss.
All right, so let's put you on the spot. Which conference is going to win more total games here?
Ooh.
So there's, what, nine games in total. All of them are SEC versus Big 12. So, mm-hmm. You know, without doing too much math, what's the final record for all of these games?
I'd say the SEC wins six or more games.
You know, I was thinking the Big 12 wins five or six games. So, wow. Yeah, maybe we'll have to add that to our weekly pick 'em. We'll pick the number of games. Let's say Big 12 goes 5-4. That's where I'm at.
I was gonna drop it down to five. That didn't seem much more than a toss up. But yeah, I would say the SEC wins five. But right. Goes 5-4.
Kyle once again proves that he doesn't have the guts to go for the big picks.
Absolutely not.
College Baseball Nation, we only have picks where we hedge our bets, or at least half of the staff.
Hey, I mean, we're like the math people here, so we know how to hedge our bets and do right there.
you cannot say we are the math people when we're making predictions, because then the second we get all these wrong, people are going to be like, oh, okay, math people.
Yeah, I mean, they're mostly just guesses, right?
Educated guesses, hopefully. And, yeah. You know, we'll see how this plays out. Oh, it'll get easier as the season goes along and we get actual looks at teams in games, because, you know, right now it's pretty hard to get eyes on these guys.
Yeah, just any more amount of information that we can get, like, going forward, the season will be better than the going off of fall reports from this past year and, like, barely any baseball.
Yep. Well, Kyle, the next time we talk on this podcast, we will be talking about games that have happened in the past tense.
Oh, my God.
That is just absolutely ridiculous.
Oh, so exciting. I'm going to have my TV on all of the games this weekend.
Yep, that's I'm sure all of our fans, all of our listeners are going to be in the same boat. Friday, totally blocked off watching college baseball this weekend. Find a comfy couch, get the streams going, and let's watch some college baseball.
Let's do it.
So that's all we have for this week. Thanks for listening. If you're listening for the first time and haven't already subscribed, you can find the podcast on Apple, Google, Spotify, and a whole bunch of other places. We're also on social media. We're on Instagram and Twitter at collegeballnat. We love interacting with fans. And if you have any questions for us, want to drop a question in our mailbag, feel free to message us on either of those platforms. Thanks for listening, and hope you have a great week.